Hello everyone, welcome to your Mind-Body Connection class. I'm Abigail Stibley, I'm a Mind-Body Coach, and I'm here with Jen Trulson, Chris Marie Campbell, and Jessica Stewart, and we are going to give you everything you need to know for this Mind-Body Connection class so that you can take this and study it and prepare for your live class with your instructor during your cohort. So today, I just want to quickly say hello myself and let everyone introduce themselves for a second. So go ahead, guys.
Hi, this is Jen Trulson. Super excited to be here with you guys and talk about the mind-body connection.
Yes, and this is Chris Marie Campbell, and I love this group of instructors, and I'm sure you're going to get a lot out of this class.
This is Jessica Stewart. I am not sure that you'll get a lot out of this class. I don't like any of the people. No, just kidding. And we're all actually mind-body coaches as well. So we're all trained in this discipline and have learned it from Abigail. So you really are getting it straight from the source. So welcome.
Yeah, and what we're going to do today is just have a conversation around all of the points on your Mind-Body Connection class outline so that you can hear the content from multiple perspectives, so it's not just one instructor, and that will give you lots of fodder for thought and learning. So that's our plan for you guys. So with that in mind, I'm going to go ahead and start by talking about the class objectives for a quick moment here. So the first thing we're going to do is define and clarify the mind-body connection, because that's, you know, it's a word that's thrown around a lot, mind-body connection. And what does that really mean? What are we really talking about? What exactly does that mean to you? So we need to talk about that a little bit. Then we're going to talk about understanding what creates a mind-body disconnect. So what's going on when we're not really feeling that alignment between mind and body? And we're going to review the tools that you have in your Martha Beck toolbox that enhance the mind-body connection. And then we'll talk about applying those tools to yourself and also using those tools with clients. So that's what we'll do today. And then when you are on the phone with your live instructor, you can ask all kinds of questions about that. So with that said, let's dive right in and start with defining and clarifying the mind-body connection. So the first thing on your outline says, mind-body awareness is about becoming the compassionate observer of the mind, body, and emotions in order to access the stargazer. So if there's one word that really sums the mind-body connection up, it is awareness. And that's really what we're doing. We don't have to connect our mind and body because they're already connected. We are in this inseparable being that is a mind and a body and also a stargazer. So we don't have to do anything. What we're actually doing is just becoming more clear that we are all of these parts and that we are not just one or the other. So awareness is what helps us begin to balance out the connection between the body, the emotions, the mind, and the intuitive stargazer self. When we're not fully aware of all these different parts of ourselves, they tend to kind of fall out of balance, and we start to have dominance in one area or another. So we'll talk a lot about all of this in when we get a little further along, but that's the first point to understand, is that we are focusing on awareness. We're not trying to fix anything. We're not trying to change anything. We're not trying to make ourselves any different than we are. We're looking at it and we're saying, oh, this is what's going on in my body. This is what's going on in my emotions. This is what's going on in my mind. And this is what's going on in my intuitive stargazer self. So with that said, Jen, do you have anything you want to add to that before we dive in? I just had a feeling you might, so I threw it out there.
No, I'm just sitting here nodding my head with everything that you're saying. Because it's just such exciting stuff. And I think that is everything that you said about awareness and not trying to fix anything. One of my favorite things to do as I build that awareness in my body, with my emotions, in my mind, is to remember that it's all just information. And so that's just part of the awareness for me about not trying to fix it. It's just information.
I just want to add on to that one thing I like to do too, and is when we kind of have the awareness of information and not judging it, and we'll talk more about becoming the observer, sort of the compassionate witness, is I usually try to take the terms good and bad out of conversations when it comes to mind-body stuff. There's no good emotion, there's no bad emotion, there's no good sensation, there's no bad sensation. So sort of taking that out of the picture first thing is really helpful.
Love it. That's awesome.
We're awesome.
Chris Marie, anything you have?
Just the idea that so often, I mean, for me, just the idea of trying to fix my body. I was an athlete and felt like if I could only fix my body, then I'll get over it. And so I guess it's kind of more this is the body awareness piece, the idea that there's nothing to fix, even though that I was desperate to fix everything and to get it to a better place, and then I would be okay. And shifting that idea that, like what Jen was saying, it's all information, and how can I be with, like Jessica's saying, those sensations, that they're actually giving me information. And that's easier said than done, but it's a very powerful shift, kind of a paradigm shift that took me a while to get into.
I love that. Yes, a paradigm shift for sure. And it's even after doing this for a long time, I find I have to remind myself of that. I can sometimes fall into the fixing pretty easily. So it's a great point to really bring out up front like this because it's tricky. It is totally a paradigm shift.
Yeah, and you know, Abigail and you guys, I want to add one thing too because I can almost feel people's objections, you know, some of the skeptics on this topic. You know, one of the things I found is that a lot of folks that come into Martha's training are really attracted to the fact that she has such a beautiful blend of science and spirituality and humor. And so one of the things I think that can happen with the mind-body connection is there's a little bit of skepticism that comes up. Why are we talking about the mind and the body? I want to set goals and solve people's problems, and I want to get through this. And I think that there's sort of this underlying language that happens in all of Martha's books that people may not be as tuned into, but it's actually front and center, which is the idea that our stargazer, our essential self, speaks to us through our body. And so part of what you're going to be learning in this class and in the, you know, additional conversations we have is that tapping into that awareness is what ultimately helps our clients achieve their goals and helps us achieve our goals as coaches. And I think just kind of suspending your disbelief around this topic, if you have any, is going to really serve you well because it is foundational to the entire coaching experience. It's everything Martha teaches. She just doesn't use the exact same terms we may be used to. So just go with us on this journey. And if you were already there, then ignore me.
This is Jen, and that brings up something for me, is that, like you said, it's underlying in all of Martha's books, and our natural inclination is to want to fix things. And when we discover this, you know, these parts of us, we realize that there is nothing to be fixed for anybody or our clients or even ourselves, but that we get all of our information from within, right? We all have our own answers from within. And so it is so fun to start out with this class and build this awareness and start thinking this way, because I think it takes the pressure off of you as coaches to want to go out and fix things, because what you're going to be doing is helping your clients build this awareness as well to find their answers within.
Excellent point.
Totally.
And I also want to acknowledge, though, when somebody is in major pain, this is Chris Marie, when they're freaking out and it's hard to believe that is there for some good reason. And so it's balancing, you know, how to deal with that, the current issue when somebody's in pain, and believing this process. So I'm just putting that in.
Physical and emotional pain.
Yeah,
exactly. Whatever
issue
our clients brings to us. So,
right.
Yeah, this is definitely new stuff because people are so used to letting their intellect do the heavy lifting, especially because that's how our country and our sort of our culture is run, is you know, big brains equals big power.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway.
And the ability to do this for me helps me, that my mind-body connection, when I become aware of that, it helps me so much coach somebody else through their own disconnect that they may be experiencing.
Yeah, totally. All right, Ab, we've taken us long way around, so.
No, it's good. I think it's really all an important introduction to this whole topic, because when we're talking about being coaches, we will be facilitating change for people, because that's what happens. Shifts and changes happen. But if we go in with that idea that we're going to fix something, then we've lost sight of the genius of that stargazer intuitive self. So when we stop trying to force change to happen to ourselves and we become the observer and the aware witness of that, what happens is the change that wants to happen emerges on its own. So we're doing that for ourselves as coaches so that we can be that witness and help our clients become that witness, so that we're not trying to force change, we're allowing change to happen and allowing our mind to step out of that role of trying to drive things a certain way so that that deeper wisdom emerges. So I think it's actually really the biggest point that needs to be addressed. So I'm glad we're focusing on that right away.
Right on. Yes. Yes. You are not broken. You do not have to be fixed, period.
Yes, exactly. To sum it up.
Even though it may seem so at this time or this paradigm. Or in
exactly.
Paradigm.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk for a minute about body awareness. And body awareness, I'm just giving you a few points here to help you be more clear about it so that you can practice it for yourself and then help clients with that. So it involves becoming aware of the different parts of the body. So you'll find as you begin to do some of the tools like climb back into your body that you might notice different parts of the body you are less mentally aware of, or you realize you don't really think about them very much, or you find it's even a little hard to feel the sensation in them. And that's nothing to worry about. It's totally normal to kind of find you have different parts of the body you're not connected with mentally, but this is where you begin to reconnect. So you just observe that. Like, let's say you don't notice your feet as much as you want to, then you're going to say, oh, okay, interesting. So it's just gathering that information. So there's the different parts of the body. There's the fight or flight response, which becoming aware of that can be extremely helpful. So we'll talk a little bit about that in a second. Becoming aware of tension or relaxation in the body. So noticing if you're carrying any tension anywhere. And being compassionate toward yourself as you do develop this awareness. So not saying, oh my gosh, I can't feel my feet right now the way I think I should, so I'm bad. We're not trying to do that with ourselves. We're just gathering that information and saying, I notice I don't feel my feet very much, or I don't recognize that I have feet during the day. Interesting. That's how that goes. So I keep using the example of feet because, Chris Marie, I think you have a good example of that that you could share with us.
Yes. Well, I was talking to these guys as we were prepping, and, you know, I was an athlete, so you'd think I have really good body awareness. And in doing some sports, my body seems to do stuff. But really, when I try to check inside, I really wasn't grounded in my body. I think there's some quote from some book, like the guy lived, you know, a few feet away from his body energetically. I forget, it's like James Joyce or something like that. And that's really, I was not in my body energetically. And it wasn't until I started working with Abigail and she's like, you know, how do you feel? You know, I don't really know. And she says, well, you know, bring your awareness to your feet. And I was like, it was such a revolutionary experience to bring my energy to my feet, because I did not feel my frickin' feet. That's a better word than what I was saying when we were prepping. I was totally unaware of that. And as I would do that over and over again, it was like energetically slipping into my body and inhabiting it in a whole different way. And I even use it to this day, even on this call, as we're doing this recording, I'm like, feel my frickin' feet and bringing my energy down, and that's the way I get inside and inhabit more of my body. And it can be the same with the hands, these wherever you don't really relate to, just focusing your energy in there. So that's one of my feel my frickin' feet. You can imagine what I was saying.
We're renaming and creating a tool as we speak. Feel your freaking feet.
Right.
Excellent. So let's talk for a second about the fight or flight response. And that's something that is at the core of understanding your body and really how the mind and body communicate. Because the fight or flight response can be kicked off by anything that the mind considers to be a danger. So, as you can imagine, that could happen constantly to those of us who are living busy lives with things that are a little bit stressful here and there. So, the fight or flight response is part of the nervous system's response to danger in our environment. And when you feel your body going into fight or flight, which technically we should really say it's the fight, flight, or freeze response, but I'm just trying to kind of shorten it for sake of efficiency. But
and
you will feel that your body is got that agitated feeling. Your heart rate can increase. Your blood pressure goes up. You have tension in different parts of the body. You feel like you would as if you really were in physical danger. So this is how the body responds. And one of the most important things to know about it is that your body is not focused on healing when you are in this kind of a nervous system response. So the parasympathetic nervous system is the nervous system that helps you calm down and relax and heal. The sympathetic system is the one that gets activated when you are really needing to be on alert, so that you've got the adrenaline flowing, you're really on high alert. So we talk about that because we can actually be in that fight or flight response with that sympathetic nervous system activated a great part of the day and not recognize that. So becoming more aware and using some of the tools like climbing back into your body or the three breaths will help you start to recognize, oh gosh, I'm in fight or flight. There's really no actual reason to be in fight or flight, and it will let you know what your mind is doing too. So that's how you can become aware that, aha, my mind is doing something scary. The lizard brain has been activated. So that's another really important awareness piece to have around the body. Do you guys have anyone want to throw in something else about that?
No. I think you covered it.
Yeah, and I just I realized when the piece about when I came more into my body, this is Chris Marie, just how much I did realize I was in a freeze response or as in a fright response, you know, and I was unable. It's just so much when you're in your body, how much more aware you can be of what is actually happening and how ineffective those states are, which, you know, some part of you thinks it is a really good thing that it's happening, so it takes a while for that to settle down and believe I'm really not operating on the best use of my resources when I'm in a constant state of fight, flight, or freeze.
Yeah, for sure. It's hard to learn. It's hard to think clearly. So much mm-hmm. happens.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Cool. So, and really, there's a lot of depth we could go into here, but what I'm trying to do is just give you guys the basics so that you can have what you need, and then you can ask questions of your instructors if you need more in-depth around any of this, just kind of throwing that out there. So let's also talk for a second about tension or relaxation. This you will get when you do the climb back into your body tool that we'll talk about a little bit later. You'll get a clear awareness in your mind of whether you have tension in different parts of the body. And most of us are kind of aware, like, oh, yeah, I've got a little tension in my shoulders or a little tension in my back or whatever. But as you begin to do a deeper awareness practice, you'll be surprised to find you hold tension in places that you just don't even know you're holding tension. So sometimes, like, I'll realize I'm holding it in my eyebrows even. It's really weird, the muscles in the top of the forehead there. So that one's fairly self-explanatory, but I just wanted to quickly review that for a second. Anyone have anything they want to throw out there as well, you guys?
This is Jen. I'm kind of giggling to myself because, as you'll see in one of the demos that we do, the climbing back into your body, it's so much fun because you start noticing where you are holding tension. And I thought I was a pretty easygoing, laid-back person. And as I started doing the climbing back into your body, and I was doing it on a daily basis just to play with it, I would be sitting down watching TV with my family or whatever, and I'd just kind of do that, oh, I'm going to check in with my body. And I would be totally holding tension in places, and yet I thought I was just hanging out and relaxing. So it is a fun thing to be, again, I always say fun, and everyone's like, well, what's fun about that? Because you're building awareness. But it is fun to start noticing and using some of the tools that we're going to have demo and we talk about later on as well, noticing and just becoming aware of that tension and, again, letting it just be information and information and being kind and compassionate towards yourself, which I know is the next point in body awareness, Abigail. But I also wanted to mention, too, the different body parts. I'm skipping back to point one, is I didn't feel any sensation in my belly area from, like, my belly button down to my pelvic area for, I want to say, like, once I became aware that we had a body, it was like, oh, yeah, body parts. I didn't have any I didn't feel any connection to that part of my body. And I want to say it was a good 6 months before I did start feeling that part of my body again. And I know there's a quicker route to doing that now that I've learned all these wonderful tools. But at the same time, what I noticed with keeping that disconnect is I wasn't being compassionate to myself. I should feel this. What's going on? What's wrong? Mm-hmm. And so a huge key to this whole mind-body connection is that point of being compassionate towards yourself as you develop the awareness. I mean, be your own best friend. What would you do to your friend who is sharing this information? We're always so nurturing and kind. Be that for yourself through this whole process.
That's nice.
Okay. Love that. Well, perfect. So let's just move right on to emotion awareness then, because you've totally covered that. That's awesome. Perfect, perfect, perfect. So emotion awareness is a really big part of the mind-body connection that sometimes gets glossed over or ignored. So I really think I want to take a couple minutes on this one. So as you can see, the points we've listed out, becoming aware of emotional energy and the physical sensations of this energy is a really big piece of emotional awareness, because we sometimes don't recognize emotions as physical energy in the body and as a physical sensation in the body. And if you can learn to do that, then you're going to be able to be aware of the emotion and witness it and observe it rather than completely and totally ignore it or sort of identify with it and think stories about it. So you'll get more clear on that as you go through the training and learn more about watching your mind and observing your mind. But for now, we'll just focus on emotions as physical energy and physical sensations. So also becoming willing to encounter discomfort, because discomfort's not necessarily a negative thing, even though our mind will often label it as such. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And becoming aware of what you're feeling, but then letting go of the mental label so that you can experience the emotion, again, as a physical energy. And also becoming clear on telling stories around emotions. What does that mean? And identifying with them. What does that mean? Versus observing and experiencing them. So allowing the energy of the emotion to just move through your body. And then we'll talk for a second about why do we develop this kind of awareness? Because it helps you hear that intuitive guidance that comes from the stargazer. So let's just take a minute to talk about emotional energy and the physical sensations of this energy. For me, I mean, this was one of the most useful things, was to stop thinking about my emotions and to start feeling them as a physical sensation and an energy in my body. So once I could say, oh gosh, I feel sad right now, but I noticed that that's in my chest or in my stomach or something like that, and just noticing where is it, and then being aware of that sensation rather than thinking about why I'm sad. So we tend to want to analyze our emotions, figure out why we're having them, and then get rid of them. But instead, if we actually feel the emotion as a physical sensation, whatever we need to know from that is going to actually arise naturally. So anyone feel like they want to toss something out about that?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I would suggest, too, about understanding sort of the how an emotion feels in your body is if you are someone like I was that was completely in my head about, well, I'm sort of trying to, how do I state this? So when I was younger, my mom passed away when I was 17, and one of the things that happened sort of as a result of that is the emotion was so big and sort of so traumatic, if you will, that I didn't know how to deal with it or process it. And so I did just as Abigail was saying, which is I thought about my emotions. And so until you really begin putting some attention and time on understanding what emotions feel like and kind of understanding the difference between thinking an emotion and feeling an emotion, the concept may be very foreign to you. It took me a lot of work with these tools, that climbing back into my body, that sort of, you know, joining up with my body in order to actually know that it was okay for me to have an emotion. Otherwise, I would just shut it off and I'd go eat something. I'd go eat, you know, a burger. You know, conceptually, that may not make sense to some people. What does it mean to feel it, you know, to think an emotion versus feel it? If you're very caught off from your emotions, you may not understand it either. So that's why this work is so helpful, is it helps you understand how to get back in and to differentiate between thinking and feeling an emotion. Did I cover that right, Ab?
Yeah, totally. That makes sense to me.
Good.
And
Go ahead, Jen.
And this is Jen. I'll give an example. Because I'm an example girl, and it helps me, is because, like, this was a new concept, big for me, too. And my son is the place that I go to that just makes my heart melt, and he's also my greatest teacher. And so he can do things to where I feel an emotion rapidly. Like, and so since learning these tools and having that awareness that I'm having emotion, I will physically now, instead of reacting to it, I will feel it. And the way I do that is I'll just even say, I'm feeling really angry right now. And I'll walk into my bedroom and I'll do whatever I need to do. Where am I feeling this anger? What sensations am I feeling? Where is it in my body? My body will actually shake sometimes. Sometimes I might want to hit a pillow. Sometimes I might want to scream into a pillow. But I'm not thinking about why I'm angry. I'm just noticing the actual physical sensations in my body of anger, and I'm feeling it. And I'm letting it process through me. And as I do that, the next thing you know, I've not stopped it, but I've felt the feeling. And so when we were talking about feeling our feelings, which again is like sometimes we're like, what? How do I do that? Again, it's that being your own best friend. It's being compassionate towards yourself and noticing when you do react, and that's okay, but also raising that awareness so that you do start noticing when you are having an emotion, how you can allow yourself to actually feel it and run through you.
Yeah, perfect. Chris Marie, did you have something too?
Yeah, I just wanted to say kind of the piece for me was like dealing with the discomfort, because I can get kind of flooded with emotion, kind of what you're saying, Jen. You feel it rapidly, but I'd feel like, oh, I don't know if I could deal with this, and then that would start my up and out of my body process. So it was the willingness to kind of go, okay, wait a minute, let's feel my feet and feel my body and turn towards this sensation. And actually think of it, not think of it, but experience it as a sensation and locate it. It was a way to kind of cut it down to size, so to speak, so I wasn't kind of completely overwhelmed and flooded, but I could actually be with what was happening as opposed to kind of abandon myself in the feeling. So it's just a way of working with that discomfort.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point, that it can actually make the emotion worse. It can feel a lot worse if you're not aware of it physically. It actually seems more overwhelming.
Yeah, and we tell ourselves a story. I can't handle this. This is too much for me. And as opposed to, oh, wait a minute, okay, I feel my body. I feel this pain here. It's pulp, you know, whatever it is, squishing or tightening. It pairs it down to size somehow.
Yeah, exactly. It's less scary somehow.
Right. Which allows it to feel, move through, like, and even moving it, like Jen was saying, with the pillow or, you know, if it's anger.
But not food. That doesn't help. That just
yeah.
numbs it.
I have done that too my whole life.
And I will again.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Self-compassion. Sometimes
right. You
feel it, sometimes you stuff it, and you observe that, and then that helps. It's actually worse when you get mad at yourself for stuffing it, because then you just stuff it some more.
Compounding stuffing.
Well,
burgers,
it goes back
Oreos. Yes, compound stuffing like Oreos. It kind of goes back to the beginning of the conversation, too, which is this idea of not labeling it. So whatever you do in regards to your emotions, whether you have a decoy behavior, you know, where you watch television or go on Facebook instead of feeling a feeling, so, you know, fear, sadness, anger, whatever, that's not bad. That just is. And as Chris Marie was saying, it's like it's the story you create about it. So it's the same thing here. It's like, oh, gosh, you know, I really – the revelation I had when I realized that I didn't feel my feelings, I was really good at thinking them, and years and years and years of therapy of explaining how I thought what I felt looked like. it's that – and not that therapy is bad. It's just that was what I was really good at doing. I was really good at talking about what I thought a feeling felt like. So but that's just the same thing. This is all compassion, no judgment, no judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Notice if you're not good at feeling your feelings. Notice if you're good at feeling anger but not sadness. All of this is just information, like Jen was saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it's part of how, to bring this to some of what you're going to focus on in the training, it's part of how you become TAO, transparent, authentic, and open, with yourself, and it makes it easier to be that with others. Because if you're stuffing your emotions and not aware of them and you're focusing on analysis and getting rid of them, it's hard to be TAO with yourself because emotions are what help us know our needs. So it's a little bit confusing. Then once you do allow that energy to flow, you become more aware of what you need, what your truth is in this moment, and then you can share that with other people in your life. So it improves your ability to be TAO, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
Cool. So let's talk a little bit about discomfort, you guys, because that's the big kicker. People are like, oh, when I'm working with them, I don't want to feel these uncomfortable things. So, you know, it is about encountering discomfort when we feel emotions sometimes, because a lot of times the mind tells that story. This is uncomfortable. I don't want to feel this. So we have to look at the purpose behind discomfort. So discomfort is not something that means anything bad. It's not a negative. It just means here's some information that's going to help you. So if you think about, like, if you put your hand on a hot stove and it hurts, that discomfort is telling you something. It's saying you'd probably feel better and your life would go better if you moved your hand off that hot stove. So, you know, it's not like, it's not trying to just torture you for no reason. It's giving you feedback that you need to know. And emotional discomfort is the same idea. It is there to help you know things that you need to know about yourself, about your life, what's going on. So if you're not willing to encounter the discomfort, you miss the important messages. And so that's kind of the old shoot the messenger thing. If you're shooting the messenger, then you don't get the message. But if you're willing to say, okay, you know what, it's a little uncomfortable right now, but I'm going to go ahead and feel this emotion, I'm going to let this sensation be here, then the messenger is allowed to be there, and you get to know more about what you need to know to move in your North Star direction. So that's a really big point that I don't hear a lot of people talking about out there in the world these days. So I think it's something really valuable that you can learn in the training and combine that with your understanding of the North Star and all of that, that this is a big piece of guidance that you get day in and day out to help you move in that direction. So anyone, ideas, thoughts on that?
I have something.
Of course you do.
One thing I wanted to say about discomfort, of course I do, I have something on everything. One thing I wanted to say about discomfort, too, is that, you know, ultimately, how do I say this? Discomfort is sometimes, this is going to come out wrong, aroused, or it can arise. How about that? That's better. how do I say this in not a gross way? But it can come about from our belief systems as well. Mm-hmm. So it's the belief about what the emotion might do, but it's also the belief systems themselves can actually create the discomfort. And so it's really helpful if you can spend some time sort of sorting out one from the other, allowing the emotions and the sensations, having them come to the surface, having them percolate through you, and then understanding, like, what's actually prompting this? Is it that I believe that I'll be swept away by it? Is it I believe, you know, some thought that's fueling the emotion? I think this is tricky for people, Ab, and you know, and Chris Marie and Jen, so jump in. But I'd love to understand, you know, I'd love to help them understand a little bit more how to differentiate between those two things.
Well, even when you say, like, I totally get, like, I shouldn't, like, I believe I should have this together and I shouldn't feel so jealous or so angry. You know, if I was a better person, then I'm kind of fighting with myself for actually the feeling I have and the judgment I'm having about having the feeling. So I totally agree, Jessica.
So using
about that.
It as, but so it's almost, and I think that this is what, as mind-body coaches, we would all suggest is, doing both, not immediately going to the mental place of, well, what am I thinking? What's causing that? But learning how to balance the sensations and the emotions before you go in and begin picking them apart for belief systems, I think that's how you ultimately learn how to be with discomfort and move through it. Tell me where I'm wrong, please.
Yeah, no, that's a really important point because you'll find when you get into the work of Byron Katie and thought dissolving that a lot of our thinking generates and fuels emotion for sure, you know. And but that doesn't mean that you want to skip over the part of feeling it because there is all kinds of information in that we need. So we allow the sensation, we allow the anger, the jealousy, the whatever it might be, and then we notice as well the thinking because it's like Jen was saying earlier, it's like a little observation scientific moment, like, oh, I noticed this, this, and this. I'm feeling this. I'm thinking this. And that way it can unravel itself, and you don't want to, like, dive in and try to change your thinking to feel differently immediately because then you miss all of that important information that comes through from the experience, which reminds me, too, in the acceptance and commitment therapy, they talk about experiential avoidance, which is what we're doing when we're judging ourselves around an emotion or when we're analyzing it instead of just letting it happen. And experiential avoidance is really what happens to us when we don't allow emotions to exist in our bodies. And experiential emotional avoidance is a problem because that doesn't mean that we feel good. It just means we're avoiding the feeling that is there. So you just can't skip the emotion, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Even though we wish we could a lot of the time, can't do it. So you got to be aware.
Well, when you think about how much emotion, how much energy is in emotions, it's just energy in motion. That's kind of the, so to allow it to move is like Jessica's saying, like, that happens, if that can happen first, then there's a settling, and then I have more resource to actually look at my beliefs even.
Well, and we talk a lot about an emotion. It takes 90 seconds to move through us. So if you can hang in there for a minute and a half before you process something, I think you're in pretty good shape.
Well, and I like to, I know, and I love that bit of research or statistic that tells that. So to me, I look at it as just honoring. It's a way of honoring my body, honoring what I feel, honoring the truth in the moment, even if it's like you guys were saying, jealousy or those uncomfortable feelings that arise for us that we're not used to. We typically go to that judging again. And I so believe in, you know, almost, I think through my whole process, I ended up, you know, changing my language with myself into this honoring and compassionate, kind person, because it was almost as if I was dating my body again and dating my emotions. It's this new awareness, and so I was giving. I sound like I crack myself up when I hear myself.
He's so amused.
I like that you're dating yourself.
You know, it's a love relationship again. And so, you know, again, I'm not going to make sense now because I'm being cow. I'm onto myself. So take it away. But everything you guys were saying, it reminded me of how, for me, it was learning how to honor what I was feeling and not judge it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so let's talk about becoming aware of what you're feeling, which is really step one. So you have to notice that first, because that's the beginning. What am I feeling? Am I feeling anger? Am I feeling sadness, fear? Maybe you can't put a label on it, and that's fine, but it's more the asking of the question, what am I feeling? Because that takes your mental focus and shifts it toward the emotion rather than towards judgment or any other type of mental activity. So what am I feeling? Maybe you do have a label. Maybe you can say fear, anger, sadness, or whatever. And so that's great. It gives you a little bit of information. But after you ask the question and after you notice, then you just drop into the experience. So you let the label go. Don't worry about it anymore. And that's when you just feel the physical sensation of the emotional energy itself. So that might look like, okay, I notice I'm sad. All right, where do I notice that in my body? I feel in my body like a heaviness in my chest. I feel an energy sort of sinking down. And then you even kind of just let go of that and you just be with it. Just let your attention be on it. And it's really that simple. And like Jessica was saying, it can be 90 seconds. It might be a little longer, a little less even, but like that's you're not going to be there for days or weeks. So...
Well,
letting that
although
energy
sometimes we
happen.
Think we will be.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The mind goes, oh, my God, this can't be forever.
If I let myself feel this, I'll never stop.
Well,
right.
And also, you may experience, a significant catalytic event in your life that throws you into a deeper process of mourning, and you may experience a range of emotions sort of on an ongoing fashion,
mm-hmm.
and that's normal, but the one overwhelming sensation of, you know, fear or anger, that first jolt, you'll notice how it'll run through you, and you'll be like, oh, okay. And then you'll think of it, you're like, oh, God, not again. But you'll notice that there are the fallow periods in between, and that's kind of the emotion running its course, and that gives you proof that you can survive it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like waves. I always think of it like ocean waves. You can ride them. You know, they keep coming and they go and they come and they go, and we have emotions every day, all day, like that. But
kids are great models for that. I'm sure, Abigail, with your little baby there, you can tell. I mean, happy and then sad or angry, and, you know, they shift so quickly. We really get stuck.
It's true. I do. I have a little one-year-old right now, and she, you've probably heard her on the call because our house has a lot of echoing floors. But, She's always moving through her emotions, just, you know, minute to minute, and it's very quick, and that is a fabulous model, and I really love learning that from her right now, just watching her do that, because she doesn't have any self-judgment. She's just like, I am 100% angry.
Right now, I'm in it.
Yep, I am 100% happy.
I am feeling this feeling right now.
Yes.
And now it's over.
And then it's over, yep. So that really brings us to the next point, being clear on telling stories around emotions, which is what makes us identify with them. So if you say, okay, I'm sad and I shouldn't be sad, or it's really bad that I'm sad, or any kind of story that you might tell yourself about that emotion actually makes you identify with being sad even more than if you just pelt it right now. Mm-hmm. So there's that piece, and there's also like identifying with a story that makes you feel sad consistently. So like if you think, I don't know, my husband is really unkind to me. Like, let's just throw out a random story. You think that thought, you feel sad, and if you make that story go round and round and round, then you become identified with that story and that emotion. So this is where we break that into pieces and go, okay, there's a thought about my husband, there's a feeling, sadness, and then there's whatever sensations are in my body. So you focus on each thing, notice it all, separate it out, and eventually, you know, you can dissolve that thought and shift what energy that's creating in your body. So we identify with things when we focus and make meaning around sensations in the body with the mind. Do you guys have anything to add to that? Because that can be a little tricky at first.
To add, this is Jen. Tell me if I'm right on, because we've had this discussion too in some of the other classes, is one of the ways that I find that helps me get out of that, instead of I am sad, saying I am feeling sad.
Yes, absolutely. That's a great way to do it. I am feeling, instead of I am whatever. Go ahead, Chris.
I've even said something in me is sad, so that I know it's not all of me, because I have more of an overwhelming process. Because I'm the one that says, oh my gosh, if I feel this, I'm not going to be okay. That's one of those stories. So if I can again cut it down, say, well, something in me is sad. There's lots of me available, and something in me is sad.
And you know what?
Yeah,
I like that too. I actually thought of something too that my personal trainer said to me that really applies here. She had me lifting these really heavy weights, and I was kind of doing this sort of dead drop from, you know, holding them above my head and pulling them down. And I said, they're too heavy, they're too heavy. And she said, Jessica, are they too heavy or are they very heavy? And I'm like, they're very heavy. Because she said, the difference is like you're lifting them. I see you lifting the weights. They are very heavy. You need to do what you need to do in order to preserve yourself so that you don't cause damage, hurt yourself. But know the difference between it being too heavy and very heavy. I think emotions are the same way.
Yeah, this is too intense. This is very intense.
How can you make it less intense?
Yeah. Mm.
And still feel them, still do the work, the heavy lifting.
Yeah, and the intensity can be ramped up extremely high by telling a story about the emotion in your mind. You know, the more you say, this is really hard, I can't do it, I can't stand it, this is too much, I mean, the worse it gets.
Well, that's exactly what was happening, is I was struggling there. Oh, my God, these are too heavy. And that's why she stopped me. It was like, whoa, stop having those weights over your head while you're screeching about how they're too heavy.
Yeah, then you're going to drop them on your head.
Exactly.
Right.
And that's what was about to happen. And so she was like, no, bring it down. Totally like lifting weight. Lifting weights is totally like feeling an emotion.
Well,
yeah.
And it's like the physical pain versus the emotional pain. It's really quite similar.
Very similar.
Yeah.
So why do we develop this kind of awareness, emotional awareness? Because we want to hear our intuitive guidance as coaches, because that's what makes us coaches. That's how we know where to go with a client, which tool to use, how to flow the tools together. So the more we are emotionally aware for ourselves, the more TAO we are with ourselves, the more we can hear that stargazer who is guiding us with a client in every moment. And not only just with clients, but for our everything in our lives. But as speaking right now for you guys who are wanting to be coaches, that's the whole thing that we want to do when we're in session. So a little point I want to throw in here is that we don't have to feel fabulous when we're coaching all the time. I think that's something that's easily misunderstood in coach training. Like, I have to feel happy all the time in order to be a good coach. No, all you have to do is feel what you're actually feeling in order to be a good coach. So what that does with your client is creates a sense of authenticity, because they don't feel from you like, oh, you're feeling sad right now. You don't have to tell them you're feeling sad right now if something's going on and you're feeling sad. It just gives them a sense of authenticity in your energy if you are acknowledging to yourself that you feel sad right now instead of trying to cover that up and seem happy or seem great or whatever. So it's that authentic energy, and it makes you feel grounded and connected to them because you're not trying to avoid anything in yourself. Does that make sense, you guys? Do you have anything to add to that that would make that more clear?
Yeah.
Of course.
I was going to say, I think one thing that's important, what you're saying is spot on, and what I'd add is ultimately our job is to create a place for our troubled clients and for us to not be troubled with them. Mm-hmm. And so not burdening them with our story or taking the time, if you're about to go into a session and you're feeling sadness, honoring it, allowing it, letting it move through you, doing a little bit of work to kind of get clean on it before you go into a session, because ultimately when you take that time, that's what Abigail's talking about. You can then create that container for their troubles without burdening the mix with yours because you're ignoring them, you're suppressing them, you're setting them aside. Does that?
Yeah. Because if you don't do that, you tend to project things from yourself onto the client, which makes it harder to be a good coach and harder for them to feel truly listened to.
Mm-hmm. I remember one time when I was scared, this is more of an acting piece. I was going on stage and you're going on stage. I was really scared and I think I might have texted you, Abigail, like at the time, like, oh my God, I'm freaking out. Tell me how I can get rid of this fear. And you're like, and you expect not to be afraid? Like, what's that about? So there was a mental belief that I shouldn't be afraid, which of course, again, ramps up the fear. And that just created more space. And it's the same with coaching. If I am afraid, I am. If I'm there with my fear, then I'm not expecting somebody else, like my client, to be there for my fear. You know, I can be there with me, and then I have more space to be there with them.
Yes. Awesome. I love that. Awesome. Okay, you guys, I think we should move on to mind awareness, but does anyone have anything else on emotions?
We could probably talk like a whole other class.
I know. We've been like yakking for about an hour for now. So
I know. Let's talk about mind awareness.
Yes. Moving on. So mind awareness, you will spend a lot of time on in the training. So I'm going to keep this one short because that's what you'll learn a lot about during the thought dissolving section. But the basic thing is you're becoming aware of your thinking so that you know what you're thinking, so that it's not driving you unconsciously. So the important thing is that noticing the body and the emotions is what helps you become aware of what you are actually thinking. So we developed that, the first two steps that we've talked about here, in order to be really clear on what you're thinking. So it actually flows nicely together that way. And then there are many different mind activities that we employ, like judgment or analysis, that suppress emotions. So when you become aware of what you're thinking, you'll be able to recognize, oh, look, I'm saying this or that to myself, and I'm judging myself or whatever, and I'm avoiding feeling an emotion right now, and I'm just focusing on what I'm thinking. So there's that. And then finally, becoming aware of thoughts that you may have actually suppressed, just like we do with emotions. So that can be truths, and it can be limiting beliefs as well. So I think you guys, and tell me where I'm wrong, but the first first point here is pretty clear, and we'll be doing that a lot in training. So let's maybe move on to the second and third. So does anyone have anything you want to throw in there about mind activity and suppressing emotion?
You mean like examples of?
Or other thoughts on it, either or?
Well, we talked a little bit about it before. I mean, we talked about this idea of getting clear around the influence of your mind activity on emotions. We talked a little bit about decoys, you know, me using food to suppress any emotions I had about everything. So I think, you know, and ultimately that's really what you're talking about is all of those things. So I feel like we've covered it.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Obsessing, like I get, oh, well, I'll obsess about my business and da-da-da-da versus, you know, that, and then I don't actually feel what I'm feeling, which might be fear or, you know, anxiety. But it does nothing to get me forward.
Yeah, ruminating, overanalyzing, catastrophizing, any mind activity that doesn't, like you're saying, move you forward from this point on, or distracts you from feeling the feeling that you're actually trying to express.
Mm-hmm.
That's all being aware, being able to name it and notice it and say, oh, look, here I go again. I'm overanalyzing. That's what I do when I'm feeling really scared.
Mm-hmm.
That's all about mind awareness. And it's not bad stuff. It's good stuff. Your mind is trying to support and sustain you because it thinks that's its job.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I had an example where I was friends.
Chris Marie.
Am I?
I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Jen. I appreciate that. my partner and I were friends with another couple, and I thought these were our best friends. I told myself these were our best friends, and I was really unaware, because I was saying that actually I really did not trust and felt quite negatively towards these people, and one in particular. And so it took me actually to stop lying to myself and sink into the fact that, you know what, this actually relationship doesn't work. But I was trying to get along and be good, and so it's kind of the connection of the what we tell ourselves and how that suppresses what we really feel. So in the last bullet, becoming aware of thoughts that have suppressed a truth of mine. And that was a very uncomfortable process to then go through and speak up and, you know. So, of course, I was suppressing it. Who wanted to do that?
Anytime your thought process kind of goes against the norm or goes against what, quote, everybody else is saying.
Yeah.
Is often where you'll see some of the most, or the rules you've created for your life, or the cultural belief systems, or all of that. Anytime that happens, that's what we suppress. It's like we have these rules, these mind rules that we don't want to break.
Right. Yeah. And which limits us connecting to with our essential self.
Yeah. What were you saying, Jen?
Abigail.
Oh, Abigail.
Oh, I just said totally agree.
Oh, well, that was easy. Right on.
Good example. Thank you, guys. Thanks, Chris. Mm-hmm. That was a great example of how that looks in actual life. So I think maybe we can just head on into accessing the Stargazer then, because you guys will learn so much about mind awareness throughout the training. So accessing the Stargazer, this is where we really get clear on physical and emotional discomfort and how it brings messages to us. So if we listen to the body, if we listen to the emotions by tuning in and feeling that energy, then the discomfort is allowed to move. It actually moves on pretty quickly, and the energy of the emotion is allowed to leave our body as well. So that's something that we don't always know when we're stuck in it. We're like, I don't want to feel this, and I don't want it to keep going. We don't realize if we just let it happen, it will keep going. And so we don't realize that if we're suppressing or ignoring or avoiding the discomfort, that flow of internal energy is actually stopped. And when we experience the results of that, we get even more freaked out. So that can be like more discomfort or even physical pain or tension or stored emotional energy in the nervous system, which can feel like anxiety. So the idea is allowing all this to flow is what allows the discomfort to tell us what we need to know, which is oftentimes the wisdom of the stargazer. So like Chris Marie was saying in this last example, what she needed to know was she needed to feel that discomfort and realize, oh, I don't actually trust these people. That's my inner wisdom trying to tell me this isn't actually what I really want. This isn't what's right for me. And you can think of it as like a little GPS system. So it's just telling you, oh, you know, that direction you're going may not take you to ultimate joy. You might want to turn left. So, or make a U-turn immediately. And that's, you know, it's kind of like, to use that analogy, if we got really mad at the GPS or really judged the GPS or got really frustrated at it or tried not to listen to it every time it told us which way to turn. So when we're ignoring our discomfort or trying not to have it or judging it, that's what we're doing. We're just, like, ignoring the GPS, which means we're not following that amazing navigation that our stargazer is trying to give us. So that's really the bottom line, to me, motivator behind feeling the discomfort and feeling the emotions is not only am I going to hear that wisdom and know which way to turn in my life, but I'm also going to hear that when I'm with my client, and I'm going to know which way to turn with them to help them access their inner wisdom. And I always think of coaching as like the meeting of my stargazer with the meeting of their stargazer, the client. And that's like, that's what's really happening. And I'm just here to kind of translate for them until they start to be able to hear it themselves. So that's why we want to be able to let our own emotional energy move and flow. So do you guys have any other things to add to that? Examples or thoughts?
This is Jen, and I'm just going to add that one of the things that allowed me to start feeling this discomfort was exactly what you're saying here, but I would ask the question, you know, how are you here to help me? And when I realized that our emotions are always have that information, like you say, like you're saying, Abigail, that really, like, I don't know, that set stuff free for me to allow it to be there. It was like, oh, yeah, how are you here to help me? As I was sobbing. Oh, I'm feeling sad. How are you here to help me? I'm feeling angry. It was very comforting. It ended up being something that was comforting, even though it felt scary at first.
Yeah, I love that, because it can feel scary at first, but I totally agree. It feels really comforting to me, too. Like, these aren't out to get me. They're here to guide me.
Yeah.
Well, and we actually kind of talk a little bit about that when we do the demo of using the dream analysis tool on emotions or body sensations. We can actually ask, what's your purpose? What's your helpful message? And the key there is helpful, like
yes.
Jen was saying. Help. How are you here to help me?
Absolutely. Anything else, you guys, on this one?
Just the whole idea of holding the space for the client, because there will be for them to connect, like my stargazer connecting with their stargazer, because it can feel like there's a lot of stuff in between. Certainly there was for me personally when I started. So, you know, I really like that, Abigail. I'm holding the space so that they can hear what's first turning towards these things, not turning away from them, the discomfort, emotion, and physical stuff, so that they can actually get through and understand what their stargazer is telling them. I just really like that.
Yeah, and if we do that for ourselves, we'll be able to help them do that for themselves.
Exactly,
so, yeah.
Did you I don't know. I apologize if I missed it, but did you cover sort of the difference between the essential self, the social self, and then the stargazer?
I didn't, but I can. We could talk about that for a second.
I just wanted to cover it very briefly because it is different in Martha's books, and I think it's an important distinction.
Mm-hmm.
So the sort of the essential self versus social self is in North Star, and so what the essential self is, or the social self is rules based. I don't remember all of them. I'm a bad student.
No, the social self is really, you want to think about that as the societal part of you that's shaped by society. So it's,
or family.
Or family,
culture.
Yeah. Culture, practices within a culture. So any part of you that has rules that come from external elements in the culture, basically.
They tend to be rigid, rules-based. They don't change or morph or flow easily. And then the essential self is more of our personality and our personal preferences, our innate talents and qualities. But they can still be, as Martha sort of points out in Steering by Starlight, they can still be influenced by mental illness or physical illness, I suppose. And so that's why she makes the distinction of sort of the third self, which is the no self, the higher self, or the stargazer. And that's what we're talking about here in terms of the intuitive self, the higher wisdom that you have access to. And in my experience, it cannot be explained. It has to be experienced.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is why we have the mind-body tools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's kind of got that bigger roadmap for your entire life, and it's always accepting and, you know.
Sometimes we call it the soul, but that doesn't work for everybody's belief system. So, you know, kind of giving that other element, if it's sort of your unfettered wisdom, it's fully accessible to you without your, you know, all the other stuff that might be going on.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
So, anyway, I just wanted to cover that because I think it's really helpful and can be confusing when we talk about this section. Like, what do you mean? What is this? How is this different than the essential? Because I actually think we often confuse it with the essential self. And
right.
The essential self is still vulnerable. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you were looking at it kind of in spiritual speak, the essential self would still be part of the ego. You know,
mm-hmm.
The ego is made
mm-hmm.
up of the social self and the essential self, whereas the higher self is really that wisdom, stargazer piece.
Yeah. So thank you for indulging me.
So, you guys, I think we've spent quite a bit of time on defining and clarifying the mind-body connection, which is very important. So why don't we finish up for today, and we will come back and explain the rest to these guys in another call.
Perfect.
Excellent.
That sounds good.
Thanks, everybody.
Enjoy.
Thank you.
Bye.